Keep the change, you filthy animal.
Where's the beef?
Hey, how you doing?
Hold on to your butt.
Feels like an Arby's snack.
Son of a... That's gonna leave a mark.
Chili, baby, back with...
Well, what if there is no tomorrow? There wasn't one today.
This is Tom and Jim's Top 5. Naming their top 5 lists on everything pop culture. Celebrating the 90s, sports, movies, music, and more. They're not authorities, just grown children. Here's your hosts, Tom Skull and Jim Doubt.
So, did you actually step on a jellyfish or no?
Well, I did, but partly because I wanted my wife to pee on my foot.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, a little peek behind the curtain there. That's nice.
Hey, if it's good for a president, it's good for me.
And we're recording, but he knows. You know what? It's okay because they're recording everything anyway. So that's cool.
Good point. Oh, good point, sir.
Wow, this is a good start. Well, hey, everybody. This is Tom and Jim's Top 5. I am Tom in that beautiful, beautiful voice on the other line.
Go on.
Okay, it's beautiful. Oh. It's sexy.
Oh, start.
It's extremely sexy. I'm a little turned on right now, I'm not gonna lie. it's a calming voice. We can
move on.
Oh, okay. You told me to go on. Okay.
You know, I appreciate it. You're okay. A sweetheart.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate that too. Well, Jim, how are you, buddy, huh?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good. Well, it's Monday and you know, work. This is my long week. This is my 6 days in a row week for work. And so, I had the big 3-day weekend before that. So that's the price I pay, you know.
Mm.
But it was awesome. We had a great weekend. It was very nice here in Duluth, Minnesota. Well, it's classic Duluth. It was like almost 70 degrees on Friday. Then it dropped to like 50 degrees on Saturday. And then it was like 30 on Sunday. So, you know, and today today was supposed to snow and it didn't. We have no idea. April is the craziest month. Don't ever come here in April, by the way.
Okay.
You're never coming here anyway. Let's be honest. But no, we had we cleaned up the yard. We were building a new like a fire pit area in our backyard, plus a fort in the woods for the kid. And so we're having fun with that. So.
That's awesome. Makes me actually want to come to Duluth.
Yeah, we can hang out in the fort.
Sweet.
Yes. Sweet. You bring the marshmallows. I got the graham crackers.
The mallows? We'll make s'mores?
Yeah? S'more what?
S'mores.
Yeah, s'more what? I haven't had anything yet.
You're killing me, Smalls.
Nice. Well, you, my friend, were in warmer climates, weren't you?
I spent the week in Clearwater Beach, Florida.
Uh-huh. And I'm assuming you're auditioning to get into Scientology because that's where the headquarters is.
Well, funny enough, we visited the headquarters.
Mm-hmm. You did? Oh, okay.
No, we actually did. Yeah, my wife and I are very interested. We're not interested in Scientology like, hey, we want to become members. We're interested because it's just... Because
it's cuckoo nuts. It's cuckoo crazy for Cocoa Puffs.
The L in L. Ron Hubbard stands for lunatic.
Exactly.
You sent me that.
I did send you that.
So we went one day to their visitation center right there in Clearwater. Uh-huh. And... this very nice young gentleman greeted us, and you go inside this room, and they have like media stations where you can sit and watch videos of like on like Dianetics and L. Ron Hubbard and all this like crazy, insane propaganda. And if you know anything about Scientology, you're watching this stuff going, oh, that didn't happen, and that's not true, and that's completely made up. It was extremely fascinating to sit through, and they gave us some propaganda DVDs that I can't wait to watch. Because Tom and I talk about this podcast called Last Podcast on the Left, but they just did like a 5-part series on L. Ron Hubbard. So I was like decently educated on some of his past, and then going through it, I'm just like, wow, that was completely made up. Wow, that's totally not true. And the kid who was given the tour was like, I mean, I just don't know how he did this much in one lifetime, how one man did this. And I'm like, because he didn't. He didn't do any of this. This is all bullshit. So anyway, we go through this, and then the street that it's on is called Cleveland Street, and it's kind of like a bar, restaurant, local shop district. So we kind of spill out into that, and we're walking around. And then these two older women just come out of nowhere with like a clipboard, and they're like, excuse me, do you want to take a survey? And I was like, okay, I'll bite. Yeah, I'd love to take a survey. And they were wearing the Scientology uniform, but like a big coat to cover up with, which is weird because it was like 75 degrees. Mm. So they're holding this clipboard, and yeah, I'll take your survey. And so they go, do you know what's going on with this Walgreens down the street? And we're like, no. They go, do you live here? It's like, nope, I don't. So I guess I can't help you with your survey. But the paper that they're holding, I can read the back of it. Because the pages were flipped over, and it was like bullet points. It was like A, B, C, D, and I could see D, and it just said sexual perversion and something else, like assault or something like that.
Oh.
And I could read that, and when I did, I was like, we need to walk away from this situation because I don't know what kind of survey about Walgreens has to do with sexual perversion.
Right.
So like,
well, to be fair, I could see the connection. I mean, eventually, if you hang out enough at a Walgreens in the middle of the night, there's sexual perversion is going to be implied.
True. Well, it's no CVS.
Right. No. But they're usually across the street from each other, which is weird.
They really are.
Yeah.
They are. So we wrap this up and we walk away. And then the women just start following us. And we go in and out of shops. And they would be about a half a block behind us just waiting for us to come out.
Wow.
And they did this for quite a while. And then we were like, we need to leave Clearwater. We need to get away from this area. I'm sure they know the number of our rental plates. I'm sure as soon as we walk, because there's cameras all inside that room, like hidden cameras inside that room we were in.
Oh yeah.
And I'm like, I'm sure we got radioed. Like as soon as we left, they were like, follow this couple, go talk to this couple.
Oh my gosh.
So we did that. That was super awesome. But then we did normal people things after that. Like we went to the aquarium there in Clearwater, which is awesome.
Ooh, we've gone to that before. My wife and I. We love that aquarium.
It was so cool. It's not like a normal aquarium. It's like an animal rehabilitation center, which we thought was great.
If we're thinking about the same one, it's the same one where they filmed a lot of the movie Dolphin Tale, correct? Or am I thinking of a different aquarium we went to down there?
No, yeah, it's a Dolphin's Tale?
A Dolphin's Tale, yeah.
Yep. And that dolphin's still there, and that was really cool to see. And
nice.
We went down to the Salvador Dali Museum in St. Petersburg, which was incredible. Gosh, what else did we do? We went canoeing. We went because of your recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
We went to John's Pass, which was incredible, and we went canoeing out in a little waterway there in the pass, and dolphins were swimming like with us.
Nice.
As we were canoeing. It was like, it was incredible. It was such a great trip.
Yeah.
It was only like, for the most part, it was only about 65 degrees with about 35 mile an hour winds. So if you walk out on the beach, you just get sandblasted.
Nice.
So unfortunately, we didn't get a lot of beach time, but that meant that we got to go out and actually learn the area and go do other things, which if it was 85 and sunny, we never would have done. We would have just been on the beach the whole time. So
yeah.
We ate a ton of great food, and it snowed in Cleveland on Thursday and Friday, and we weren't here for it. So that's great, too.
The Midwest. Gotta love it.
Yes. The Sunshine State.
Yes. Well, Jim, that's great. I'm glad that you got to go down there, and I'm glad that I was able to give you some recommendations. I love it down there. And my parents have a condo down there that they go to. They're actually leaving here in a week to go back down there. And I'm a little jealous now that everyone's going but me. So, but no, that's awesome. And I've missed you so much. I tried to even leave you alone on your vacation. I didn't even text you. Because I think you needed this vacation. And now, then I find out you go on vacation and you tell everyone that you were harassed by maybe some Scientologists. And now you can't even go on vacation and relax.
I know. Tell me about it. And everybody's wanting to brainwash me.
You are on the radar, my friend. Oh, boy. Well, Jim, we got a few comments. Before we get into our topic of the week, our topic this week is 90s, our top five 90s albums. So not
yes.
just songs, not bands, but our 90s albums. So this is going to be a fun one. And before we get into it, we had a few comments from last week. Not as many that we had the week before. Well, we set a record with those ones. But one comment we got from listener Carla. She said this was on Facebook. She just finished our brewery episode And you're right. It makes me want to like beer. Well, you know what? Beer's a good thing. Try it out. I enjoy it. I drink it a lot. And then we got a comment from Aiden again. From last, we had two comments from people who have commented before. But Aiden just said, his comment was in all caps. Just said, more Bane. He wants me to do. And well, you know what? Well, I'll drop it in here and there. I don't want to just, you know, overload people with the Bane. And it's a horrible impression. I don't know why people like it.
No, it is on point, my friend.
All right. Well, I'll just throw it in there when you're just talking about something random just to freak you out. He also sent, and I sent this to you, he also photoshopped a picture of me on Hulk, on the Incredible Hulk, and you said it was spot on, and I think it's just because you know my personality too much from before, and you just don't want to see me angry. So.
Tom Smash.
Puny human. So, and then we got a comment from Jeff again, and Jeff was the guy who sent us a picture. He had hip surgery, and he sent us a picture. He was listening to our podcast in recovery.
Yeah.
And he just sent another comment, and I wanted to say it again because we really like Jeff. And he said, "Hey, thanks again for the shout out on your show. You guys are so funny." And then he said he's going to take me up on going dancing when he gets better. So I gotta dust off the old dancing shoes and damn right, Jeff, I'll go dancing. What the hell? So, but yeah, that's our comments for the week. And then, of course, you know, if you ever want to comment or talk to us or anything, you can reach us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, all at TomandJimsTop5, and you can email us at TomandJimsTop5@gmail. And yeah, and make sure to rate us and stuff on iTunes and Stitcher or Podbean, wherever you listen to our podcast, and spread the word. So that's good. But Jim, let's get right into it because we have been long-winded for the last couple weeks.
Way too long-winded.
it got a little bit better last week. So, you know, but this, we picked a topic that's near and dear to our hearts. So hopefully this will just go smooth, rapid fire. What do you think?
I hope so. I hope so. We also picked this because I got into town about 10:45 last night.
Uh-huh.
So we needed a topic that we already knew most of the things we know off the top of our head, and we can actually just have a normal bar conversation about these things instead of doing a ton of research. So this would be a conversation Tom and I would have bellied up to a bar about four beers in.
I was just going to say, like, for those of you listening out there, and you're right, Jim, we might have had this conversation at a bar. Mm-hmm. I don't quite remember. But this is the conversation people should be having at a bar. Hey, what's your favorite 90s albums? And then, you know, this is what people should talk about instead of looking down at their phones. So go out and start drinking at a bar and leave your phone in the car. Right? Hey, that rhymed.
Hi-oh.
Hey-oh. Anyway, so yeah. Well, let's get into it, Jim. You want to start this week or should I?
I'm going to go ahead and start. I'm going to be selfish.
You're never selfish, Jim. You know what? I love your confidence. Just so you know, I love your confidence.
Thanks. That's also the name of my cologne. Ode to confidence.
Oh, mine is desperate. Anyway.
Okay. Number five.
Yes.
1995's Oasis. What's the Story, Morning Glory?
Wow. That's a good one.
I chose my list. I have a ton of standbys here.
Yeah.
Quite a long list of albums that didn't make it, but I chose mine. If I'm going to go on a road trip and I can take five albums from the 90s with me, what are they going to be? And this is on my list. It is the second studio album from Oasis after Definitely Maybe. Singles on it, of course, Wonderwall. Champagne Supernova, which is one of my all-time favorite songs. If you like Wonderwall, look up Ryan Adams' cover of Wonderwall. It's even better than Oasis's version. Roll With It, Don't Look Back in Anger, some might say. All singles, all great. It's a fantastic album. I thought it was kind of interesting. The cover of the album is a picture of two men passing each other on a street in London called Berwick Street. And the two men are a London DJ named Sean Rowley and the album's sleeve designer named Brian Cannon. The album's producer, Owen Morris, is also in the background. And he's holding up the master tape of the album itself in front of his face. And they chose that street because at the time it was popular for a lot of record shops, which I thought was all very interesting. I didn't know any of that.
That's cool.
You're cool. And then obviously Noel and Liam Gallagher, the brothers in Oasis, are just a giant shit show. And they fought during this album, and one of them left the band for like 3 weeks, and they got back together and made a couple more albums and then fought more and whatever. They're annoying, but this is a great album, and it's probably collectively the best album they did.
Yeah, it is a great album. And speaking of those brothers, it's fitting because we're recording this on National Siblings Day. So, good luck to them. So, and call your sister.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you're right. I mean, it was easy for me to make my list somewhat. I mean, there's a few, like, I kind of changed, and I'm like, oh, well, do I want this one? But quoting my friend Tony when I was talking to him about this, he's like, here's my five, but I have about 75 other honorable mentions.
Yeah, totally.
It was hard. And this was one of my honorable mentions. I love this CD. It's a great CD. Yeah, and I did the same thing. I picked based on, I had to like, almost if not all the songs on the CD, and it had to be like, could I sit in my bedroom and listen to it? Could I listen to it playing sports? Can I listen to it? I can listen to it anytime, anywhere, you know? So
yeah.
And road trips is a big one that I thought of too. So that's good. That's good. Anything else on Oasis, Jim?
No, pretty cut and dry.
I like it. Nice, quick, rapid fire. Here we go. okay. Well, my number five is, a little band out of Seattle, and it's not the one you're thinking of. This is Pearl Jam.
Ooh.
The album is 10.
It's a classic.
I freaking love this album. This was one, like, I put it at number five because my number six, which we can talk about later because it might be on your list, was like, I couldn't decide between the two. And I'm like, well, I mean, this is the band I absolutely loved all the way through the 90s, so I have to put them in. So, anyway, so yeah, 10, it was their debut album, which is awesome for a debut album to be that good. And it was released in 91. And so the bassist and the guitarist of Pearl Jam, Jeff Amnett and Stone Gossard, they were in a previous group called Mother Love Bone. And that band broke up. And they recruited Eddie Vedder and a couple other guys, the other guys who are currently in the band, to form Pearl Jam in 1990. And then less than a year later, they came out with 10, which is an incredible, incredible album. Some of the main singles people know are Alive, Even Flow, and Jeremy. Those are great songs, but the whole CD is great. As soon as it was released, it immediately went to number 2 on the Billboard 200 chart within days of being released. And they're accused, like, Pearl Jam gets some flack, at least back then, of accused of jumping on like the grunge bandwagon, which is kind of BS because they're like, they recorded these songs and before Nirvana came out with their big CDs and stuff like that. So like, but they just get accused of it because, oh, they got released later. It's like, well, they've been doing this for a while. So they actually have gone, since 2013, they crossed the 10 million mark of sales on the CD, and then they have actually been, I think, over 13 million now, up to date, of how many CDs have been, or albums of that has been sold, because no one buys CDs except for you and I.
I have 10 on vinyl, actually.
God damn, really?
Yeah, I do, yeah. Nice. Yeah, I bought it at a Virgin Records in Chicago years ago before it closed down, yeah.
Nice.
I actually was just watching the video for Jeremy on YouTube at work the other day.
It's great.
A coworker of mine and I were talking about how amazing that video is.
It's a great video.
Yeah.
It's a great song. So I mentioned Gossard and Amnett before. They actually wrote, they wrote the music to songs. They had five songs that they had wrote before they even contacted anyone to sing them, to find lyrics. So they had Dollar Short, A Guillotine Crave, Footsteps, Richard E's, and E Ballad. And this is the names they came up with. Well, they sent those demos out and to some singers, and then they found San Diego musician Eddie Vedder, and he acquired the demo, and he immediately wrote lyrics for some of the songs, and then they flew him up. And within, oh gosh, what was it? It was within 1 week, they had lyrics and songs for half the album.
Yeah.
And then they decided, hey, you want to sing them too? Because he wrote them all. And so, like, he wasn't even part of the band yet when they wrote almost all of it.
And I don't know if you're going to touch on this, but as a side note, when you talked about Mother Love Bone and how Gossard and Emmett were in Mother Love Bone, were you going to touch on this?
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. So the lead singer of that band was named Andrew Wood, and he was really good friends with Chris Cornell. Mm-hmm. So when he died, Cornell joined the other two and did kind of a tribute to him called Temple of the Dog,
right,
which everybody knows the song Hunger Strike. So when Eddie Vedder was auditioning with the other two, he was just happened to be there, and he sat in on the recording session, and they didn't plan on him singing kind of that duet with Chris Cornell. He was just in the room, and they couldn't get the lyrics to work. They couldn't get the vocals to work, and he just kind of like stood up and jumped in, and they nailed it. Like, it wasn't, yeah. I always thought that Pearl Jam was a band and Soundgarden was a band, and they did this co-op thing, and that couldn't be further from the truth. Like, right. Eddie Vedder was nobody and just sitting in this room when they did it. So I always thought that was a really awesome backstory on that song.
Well, and everyone thought that because all those like the Temple of the Dog stuff got released later, you know?
Yeah.
And everyone thought, oh, they're collaborating, which it was still cool. And it, as in a CD I had, or an album I had, was there when they released it. It was a great one. So I mentioned, yeah, Vedder got signed by the band, and then within a week they wrote 11 of the songs. I believe there's 12 of them on the CD.
Even flow.
That sounded great.
Thank you.
Jim, do you know the original name for the band?
No, I don't.
The original name for the band was Mookie Blaylock. And yes, it's that Mookie Blaylock who played in the NBA.
They were naming it after Mookie
Blaylock.
They
named it after, and so that's when they started recording. They were still going under Mookie Blaylock, and
I'm sure he didn't have a problem with that at all.
No, well, and then so when they signed with Epic Records, Epic Records encouraged them to change the name because Mookie Blaylock at that time was big in the NBA. He was a known name, and then he just signed a deal with Nike, and they just thought, you know what? Can you just change the name? Because we don't want to deal with anything that might come up, you know? And so that's why they changed their name to Pearl Jam, but then they changed this album to 10, the number 10, because that's the number Mookie Blaylock wore in the NBA.
Oh, that's awesome. I didn't know that.
Yeah. That's pretty much I got. I mean, I could sit and go on and on about the CD, and I absolutely love it, and I still own it. I will never get rid of it. That's pretty much it. Oh, the album cover. Everyone remembers the album cover. It's just the five members and they're high-fiving on the album cover. And that actually, the artwork on there is was from the bassist, Jeff Ament, who's one of the founding members, and he did all that. But everyone remembers it for the pink cover, and it's kind of a weird cover, but apparently there was some contention, and he said, well, it was supposed to be more burgundy, and actually the band members were supposed to be in black and white, and so we were all kind of pissed about it. But it's one of the most iconic covers. Everyone knows it as soon as they see it. It doesn't even have to say Pearl Jam, they just know it from the high fives of the five members, so...
Yeah, yeah, and I think one of the most underrated or forgotten songs on the album is "Release."
Yes,
that's probably one of my favorite song on that album.
Yeah, I have it down. I wasn't gonna go into all the songs. I mean, because everyone knows the three I mentioned, but I mean, there's a lot. But "Release" is a great song. I absolutely love that song. And, you know, and this is their number one. This is their best selling album they've ever done. They had some other good ones that came out in the '90s and then later in the 2000s, and I liked them all. I really did. But 10, I always go back to 10. It's the best, one of the best albums. Yeah. So
by far, yeah.
Well, cool. Well, Jim,
pick, sir.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank you. What would you say is your number four?
My number four, and during vacation, I brought this topic up to my wife, and this album, and I don't know how I left it off my list. I had a different one on my list, and she's like, what about Sublime self-titled album? I'm like, oh my God, I totally forgot about that album.
Yes.
Oh man, this album. I'll tell you what one I left off a little bit later, but Sublime self-titled, July of 96. I was... it was the summer between my eighth grade and freshman year. And I remember that because I went on our eighth grade Washington, D.C. trip that a lot of schools do.
Nice.
And everybody had this album. This was like the only thing everybody was listening to. And I remember I bought this one, and Puff Daddy did like an EP that he came out with, that song he did for Notorious B.I.G. when he died.
Yeah.
I'll Be Missing You.
I'll Be Missing You.
He had like a 3 or 4 track EP, and everybody had those too. Mm-hmm. But that album. So it came out in July of 96, and Bradley Nowell died of a heroin overdose in May of 96. So it came out a couple months after he died, and it was their third album and their final album, released after 40 Ounces to Freedom and Robin the Hood, which were not a huge commercial success for them. Like, I guess if you lived in Southern California, you're kind of in that ska, punk, SoCal music, then you might have known kind of who they were at the time. They played with No Doubt before No Doubt blew up.
Commercially,
yes.
Sorry. I love No Doubt.
But if the songs that you know of Sublime, if you are more of like a radio person, they're on this. This is that album. It's What I Got. It's Santeria. It's Wrong Way. Caress Me Down. It's Doing Time. It's those iconic songs. And once you get into this album and you kind of expand your Sublime knowledge, and then you go back to 40 Ounces of Freedom and a lot of the other stuff that came out after Bradley died. The other two members, the bassist and the drummer, went on to do some other things. They formed Long Beach Dub All Stars, which has that same SoCal flair to it. And then they started up Sublime again and got sued by Noel's family for the copyright of the name. So the lead singer is Rome Ramirez. So now it's Sublime with Rome is the name of the new band. And I think they have two albums out, and they played with other bands kind of in that genre, like the Dirty Heads, which are that beach SoCal, just happy music. And there's a couple albums that they do crossover with, but
nice.
Dirty Heads are one of my favorite bands, and that still stems from that Sublime sound that came out of the 90s.
Nice. Yeah, this was another one that I like. Your Oasis is one of my, like, it was hard to cut out. It would be in my top 10 for sure, but I cut this one out of my five. I love that album. I absolutely love that album.
And I have it on vinyl also. It's a picture disc.
Wow.
And one side is that iconic, the tattooed shoulders of Bradley, yeah, where it says Sublime across. And then the other side is Lou Dog, the dog, the Dalmatian they always sing about.
Nice. Good pick, Jim.
Thank you, sir.
That's a good pick.
What is your number four, Thomas?
My number four. Well, let me ask you a question, Jim.
Send it.
Do you have the time to listen to me whine?
Yes.
You don't know what I'm talking about, do you?
I do. Hold on. All right.
Tick tock, Jim. Tick tock. No, this dead air. This is good for a podcast. Let's keep going.
It's Green Day's Dookie.
There you go. That's my number four.
Dude, I love that album. I love that album.
Great album. It came out, and it was their third. It was actually their third album they released. Came out in 94. And another one I still own. Absolutely love it. It peaked at number two on the Billboard chart, and it charted in 7 different countries. I mean, people around the world loved Green Day. It's arguably the album that brought, like, Green Day and even, like, the modern punk rock music into mainstream popularity. Like,
oh yeah.
Yeah, the albums they had before are good, but people didn't really know about them that much until this one came
out.
And
like Sublime.
Yeah, like Sublime. And they've again sold, I mean, all these have, I'm going to say they sold over 10 million copies. They've all sold tons of these, so I'm gonna stop mentioning that in every one of mine. But of course they had five really the whole CD's great, but 5 of their hit singles everyone knows is Longview, When I Come Around, Basket Case is probably the one that everyone absolutely knows, and then they re-recorded version of Welcome to Paradise, which people don't realize that was on an album before, and then the song She, which is
I love She.
That's a great song.
I love that. So that's my favorite song in the album by far.
Good. Well, I got more information on that, so we'll get to that in a second. It won the Grammy in 95 for the Best Alternative Music Album. And it's here. So their first album, their second album, I should say, is Kerplunk, which is good, and a lot of people have mm-hmm. that one. And that's where Welcome to Paradise was on. But they weren't on any major labels until Dookie came out. And actually, I'll have to get to that in a second when I'm looking for they were like kind of they're frowned upon on by like other punk music and stuff because they signed with a major label, you know, at the time, and everyone's like, oh, you sold out. Well, I mean, who's laughing now? Look what they're doing. They're
right,
still, I mean,
right.
They were just in Minnesota here on April 1st, and I didn't get to go, but a friend of mine did, and he's seen them like 5 times. I'm like, oh, I wanted to go, but didn't have the time off, but I wish I could have. But so Dookie, the actual name of the album was it is what it means. It's poop. It's pooping. but they used to joke about having a liquid Dookie, like the band would joke about like having diarrhea is gross, and they would call it liquid Dookie. And so that was the original, and that came about because they ate spoiled food on a tour one time and they all got diarrhea, and so that's what that's what they wanted to name the album, Liquid Dookie, but they actually everyone else deemed it too gross, so they just named it Dookie. So it's just funny. Great. Kind of weird. The most of the album is written by the lead singer Billy Joe Armstrong, who is awesome, and he looks exactly the same if you see him now. It's kind of weird. The guy doesn't age. Must be all the weed. So the back cover, the front cover has the big like a bomb going off, you know, mm-hmm. and that of course people freaked out about and thought that was not good. So. But they have explanations online. Like, I didn't go into all of it because they explain like, no, it's artwork. It's art. They had this artwork by a certain person in Berkeley, California, where they grew up, and that it was his artwork. So like, they have reasons for it. They weren't like trying to plot any kind of government conspiracy or anything. So, hold on. Oh, so the actual term Green Day, do you know what Green Day means?
I heard, I don't know if this is true, but I heard it was like a guidance counselor told Billy Joe Armstrong it'd be a Green Day in hell before he made it as a rock star. Is that true?
I don't know. That's a good one. I didn't read that one. But a Green Day apparently is a day off to lounge around and smoke pot. Billy Joe Armstrong explained it's basically about staring up at the ceiling, thinking about a girl, and being stoned. That's having a Green Day.
Oh, okay.
They're bona fide stoners, as we talked about, but they're anything but lazy. I mean, they built incredible, incredible company, or, look at what they're doing. They're on Broadway now. I mean, they're everywhere, So, like, they're not your typical, what you people think of stoners. They've actually done quite well for themselves, so... but I absolutely love this album. Longview, Welcome to Paradise, Basket Case, and She. Billy Joe Armstrong wrote a lot of the music when he was dating he wrote it when he was dating this girl, he wrote the lyrics to She, she broke up with him because she moved to Ecuador. So he decided to put She on the album. He wrote it for her, and then he kind of said, F you, you moved away and you broke my heart, so I'm putting this album on, or this song on the... like, it was... even though it's a great song, but anyway. But the same girlfriend is actually also topic of the other songs, Chump and Sassafras Roots. When I Come Around was actually inspired by, Armstrong's wife at the time, which was his wife now, but I don't know if they're still married, but his girlfriend, other girlfriend at the time, different girlfriend. Basket Case. It was their top single. Absolutely love that song. Oh, the song Coming Clean. That's what I wanted to say. I'm sorry. I'm all over the place. But the song Coming Clean, it was actually Armstrong's coming to terms with his bisexuality when he was 16 or in 17 years old. In an interview with the Advocate magazine, he states that although he has never been had a relationship with a man, his sexuality has been something that comes up as a struggle for him. So, so it's kind of weird. And the song In the End is about his mother and her husband, his stepfather at the time. And the song, here we go, the song Having a Blast, I don't know if you're familiar with it, was actually about, he wrote it when he was in Cleveland in 1992.
Oh, that's weird.
Cleveland comes up a lot in this show, Jim.
Yeah. I guess so. I talk about it.
Yeah, well, right. I love this. I don't know. It doesn't get old. I can listen to it now. I'm in my 30s, and I can still listen to this punk rock group go, and it's great. I absolutely love them. So.
Oh yeah, I love that album. It was on mine. It just didn't make the list. Yeah. They were inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame last year.
Yeah.
And in their little display, there was a handwritten note from Billy Joe when he was in grade school. And it's just like, just like fisting a crayon, writing on it. It's just scribbles, but it says that he's going to grow up to be a rock star.
Yeah. I found this part about, when I talked about their, how they're called as sellouts because they signed with Geffen Records. Mm-hmm. So they were with independent record label Lookout Records. And they left on friendly terms to sign with Reprise, not Geffen, sorry. But this independent music club in California called 924 Gilman Street, they deemed Green Day as sellouts, and they banned them from the club forever. Like, they're never allowed to go there.
I'm sure they're okay with that.
Yeah, I'm sure Green Day's fine. I'd be surprised if this Gilman Street's even in business anymore. But anyway, like I said, the CD, I mentioned some of the songs, but the whole CD is about anxiety, panic attacks, masturbation, sexual orientation, boredom, mass murder, and divorce, and ex-girlfriends. I mean, he covers it all in these songs. So, that's a good one, Jim. I am I'm happy with my choice there.
Good job. Good job, sir.
Sorry, I was rambling a little bit. I got my notes. I copy and pasted. I'll tell you what happened. I copy and pasted, and somehow I copy and pasted the same thing twice. and so that's why I was like, oh shit, I can't find it. So basically I made my own shit sandwich. I copy and pasted two things, and then in the middle was what I wanted. But anyway,
I just imagined you turning on a fan and your note cards blowing across the room.
What do you mean?
What?
Sorry. All right, Jim, we'll just move on. What do you got for your number three?
My number three, two, and one are like my favorite albums. So number three, I went with Nirvana's Unplugged in New York.
Nice pick.
I love this album, and it gets a lot of flack. People say it's more, it's just a cover album. They barely did any of their own songs. You know what? I don't care.
Doesn't matter.
I don't. You okay?
Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. It doesn't matter. Okay. This is a great album.
It is. I mean, it as a young kid, my sister had it recorded on tape. And as a young kid, it introduced me to David Bowie when he did The Man Who Sold the World. Like, that was my introduction to him. I don't care that it's a cover album. They do the Vaseline's. They do the Meat Puppets. They actually go and join him on stage for a couple songs. So this album, to me, is just like it's a masterpiece. I absolutely love it. I love Unplugged and acoustic stuff anyway, but this was like the culmination of that stuff. To watch a young Dave Grohl drumming in the background and just the whole set, the black candles and the white lilies, it's just very ominous. It was recorded in November of 93, released in November of 94. And Kurt Cobain killed himself in April of 94, if I remember right.
Allegedly killed himself.
Yeah.
He was murdered. That's my take on it.
Is it really? You think he was murdered?
Yes.
Oh, why? Okay, let's talk. Why? I guess I never really read into it a whole lot.
Because I have no basis for my for my stance. I watched a documentary once, and I'm convinced that Courtney Love had something to do with his death.
As no far, kidding.
Yeah. There's a great documentary on Netflix, I believe. I think it's called Bleached.
Yeah, I've seen that. And, I've seen it on there. I haven't watched it.
Yeah, it's incredible. And it's told mostly through the guy the cop who investigated the whole thing, and how his difficulty in dealing with Courtney Love at the time. Of course, she's a heroin addict too. I mean, she was
right.
But it just brings up an interesting thing, and it's just like I think he was he didn't accidentally overdose. I think he was given drugs and then shot in the head, and because of the way they showed where he was. He couldn't have shot himself the way his body was laying and the gun was laying and everything. So that's, yeah.
Well,
I hope I don't get in trouble.
Hypothetically.
Yeah.
Well, he died in April of 94. So,
sorry.
This is the first Nirvana album following his death. It debuted at number one. And became the most successful posthumous release, certified 5 times platinum.
Yeah.
By 1997, which is only 3 years after, won a Grammy for Best Alternative Music Album in '96. And it wasn't. I never understood this. It wasn't released on DVD until 2007, which I own the DVD of.
Yeah.
There's actually a lot of additional tracks on the DVD that didn't make the audio album. The last song on the album is Where Did You Sleep Last Night? And if you remember how the album ends, the whole album is very mellow and very melancholy. And then the very last line, Cobain screams and his voice cracks. And they say, like, that's his farewell. He's done. And they leave the stage. And producers wanted an encore, and he's like, you're not going to get a better song than what you just had, so we're not doing an encore.
Wow.
And they left it at that. And there's a lot of speculation that if he committed suicide, that this was kind of his metaphorical suicide note, if you will.
If he committed suicide.
Yes, if you want to go the route that... most people go.
Go the route. That's probably what happened.
his death certificate is actually in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame too. I saw it
cool.
A couple times ago. Yeah,
nice. Well, good.
So
great album.
I own this album on vinyl, also with an original '94 release on vinyl, and I love it. It's still one of my all time favorites.
That's a good one. MTV when they did the Unplugged stuff. That was probably the last great thing they ever did.
Yeah.
When they had Unplugged. And Nirvana won. There's not, no one beats that.
You've got Alice in Chains did a really good one.
They did.
I mean, Clapton did. Well, Dashboard Confessional did one, which I didn't really understand because they're an acoustic band. So I didn't really understand them doing.
So they just had a concert?
It's all it was. It was a concert. Yeah, Dashboard had a concert.
All right, cool.
Korn did one actually that was interesting.
Yeah.
I love anything acoustic, and right. This one was really different from the rest of them because there was really no singles. They had About a Girl, which isn't one of their main songs. They did All Apologies and Come As You Are.
Yeah.
But other than that, they were very deep tracks and covers from other people. And they wanted it that way. They didn't want a greatest hits album because that's just kind of the band that they were.
Yeah.
And I thought it worked.
Cool. Well, good. Good, Jim. Anything else on that one?
No.
Right. Well, moving on then. My number three, mine is right at the end of the 90s. And so I was a little leery of putting it on, but it's like, well, it still came out in the 90s, and I still loved it. Mine is Red Hot Chili Peppers' Californication.
Okay.
This was their seventh album, and it was released in June of '99. So that's right at the tail end there. But I'm sticking with my pick. It marked the return of their original guitarist, which is cool from when they're who was on Mother's Milk and Blood Sugar Sex and Magic, and he actually replaced Dave Navarro, who went back to with Jane's Addiction. I don't think they existed after that much anymore.
No.
Yeah, they went back and they went back together, and then it just kind of fell apart, I think, after that. But the album's subject material incorporates various sexual innuendos, your favorite term, themes. It also contains varied themes of previous outings, including lust, death, and contemplations of suicide. The actual California itself is a big theme of it, and drugs, globalization, and travel. And it's actually a really cool CD. If you it's tons of songs on here that everyone is like, oh yeah, I heard that one. I know that one. And you're like, they're all the same band. They're all in the same album. You know, those songs include Other Side, Californication, Scar Tissue. Those are some of the they're big ones. Easily is one of my favorites is on the album. I'm sorry. I thought I had all my notes together. Apparently, I don't, Jim.
When you can go through your notes there.
Yeah, and go I'll jump in here. I'll fill in just a little bit. holy shit!
I gotta say, there's a couple bands out there that I'm just not a big fan of.
Okay, this is one of them.
And I do not like the Chili Peppers.
Oh, see, I love this. And I love this CD though.
People are yelling at me right now, and then that's fine.
Yeah.
You know what? Aerosmith is another one. I cannot listen to Aerosmith.
Oh.
And I can't listen to the Chili Peppers. Now, I love Under the Bridge. That's 90s classic.
Yeah.
I love Soul to Squeeze is a great song. But other than that, there's really not too many other Chili Pepper songs I can listen to. So I didn't own like Blood Sugar Sex Magic is their like early 90s.
Yeah.
I think they have Give It Away Now on it.
Yeah.
That's like your early to mid 90s classic Chili Peppers, and I just really could never get into them.
I'm glad you're bringing this up, Jim, because I didn't like the Chili Peppers before this album came out. I didn't really care for them, and then I don't like that Give It Away song really.
Yeah.
I like Under the Bridge. I think everyone likes Under the Bridge. But I didn't like it. So a friend told me about this. I was like, you got to check this out. And I remember saying, I don't really like the Chili Peppers. I don't want to spend my $11 at Best Buy on this CD. He's like, no, I'm telling you, it's great. And this is before you could really like listen online to stuff, to make sure if you like it or not,
Yeah, yeah.
So I bought it, and I love it. And it is because it's different than their other music. It really is. Huh. And so I absolutely love it. I still have it. A couple other songs on there. There's one called Emmett Remus, which is actually Summertime spelled backwards. but it was actually inspired by Anthony Kiedis' brief relationship with Mel C from the Spice Girls. Apparently they were dating. I didn't know that. The title track, Californication, was intended to represent Californian lifestyles. The Californians. More specifically, the fake nature, which is associated with much of Hollywood. It references Kurt Cobain of Nirvana, which we just talked about, and uses considerable imagery to capture the evocative nature of California. And so, it even has, it talks about plastic surgery and talks about just so it's just mocking California, really, which is kind of cool. Flea, the bassist, who's famous for putting a sock on his junk. But
I wish I was famous for that.
He's an awesome bassist, and actually he says that Californication is their best album they've ever made, which I agree. Like I said, it's different from what they were known for in the early to mid-90s, so that's why I like it. Well, since you hate them, I don't want to tell too much more about them. And no, it's a great CD. I absolutely love it. Scar Tissue is still one of my favorite songs. So there you go.
Well, good pick, sir.
Is it, though?
Well, it's not one that I would pick. But if you enjoyed it, then it's obviously a good pick for you.
Let's just move on. All right, Jim, what is your number two?
Number two is Radiohead. Okay. OK Computer.
OK Go. Not the band. Go. What?
1997 release.
Uh-huh.
Their third album behind Pablo Honey and the Bends.
Pablo Honey.
Probably before this, they were known for Creep and Fake Plastic Trees were their big hits before this album came out. And this album, they went in a completely different direction than they had gone in the other two. It's a lot more experimental, but I remember watching the video for Paranoid Android, and it's a cartoon, and it was, this song just really blew me away. And I went and bought this album at the same time that I bought, I don't know why I remember this stuff. I bought this album and I bought Prodigy's Fat of the Land at the same time. And this album won between the duo.
Yeah. Why?
This, I still run to that album though. I'll like take that to the gym with me. But this one had Paranoid Android, had Karma Police, had Lucky, and had a song called No Surprises on it, which is an amazing song. This album, it musically, it's probably, I don't know. I love my number one album, and you can probably guess what it is because I talk about it a lot on here. But it's a hard decision for number one and number two. This Radiohead's OK Computer is phenomenal to me. There's a lot of, if you've seen the artwork for it, there's a lot of what you would call like Easter eggs throughout it. Little pictures here and there.
Because Easter's coming up, you know.
Yeah, that's why I went that way. Otherwise, I would just say hidden gems.
You're a hidden gem.
Oh, God, you're good at this game.
I try. I got to do something. I can't. Apparently, I lost all my notes, so I got to come up with some other shit. This is the worst episode ever. Okay, sorry.
On the back of the album, there's the numbers 18576397.
Is there a niner in there? Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
James, and they say it's said that is the exact time, day, month, and year that the album was completed.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, they got the name for the album from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, nice. I believe.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. I have the vinyl as well, and it's a double disc, and side A. And B, C, and D are named Eeny, Meeny, Miny, and Mo, which I thought was very clever at the time. That's, I'm a sucker for packaging.
I know.
Really,
we talk about this a lot. You and I have probably wasted more money in our life. And I don't call it wasted. We spent more money in our life just because the package looked cool.
Oh, yeah. I mean, all these albums that I have on vinyl, I also have on CD.
Yeah.
Why? I don't know. I don't need both of them.
Right,
but I own them. I tried to buy all my favorite ones, the records of my favorite ones, and this happened to be it. Let's see. I don't know if I have a whole lot else on this album. The Airbag, the first track, is fantastic. There's exit music for a film. Like, I don't know. Just this album, just such a good album from start to finish. If you don't have it. It's one of those albums you can't even do like on Spotify, because you really need to listen to it in sequence, in the order that it's intended to be listened to.
Good.
So there you go.
Yeah, I mean, I know Creep, and I know a few. I mean, I know a lot of Radiohead songs. This one's not on my list. I don't dislike Radiohead, but it's another one of those, like, I didn't have the CD. I knew most of the songs, but I just didn't have it. But they're a great band. So,
yeah, and honestly, like before this album, I like some of their stuff. After this album, they just went too far for me. This was like a good mid-range of experimental music in between their previous stuff and where they are now with Kid A, and later on, they just came out with an album, I think, late last year. But it just took it too far for me. I don't really listen to them past this album, and I really didn't listen to them too much before it. So this is just the sweet spot of Radiohead for me.
Good. Anything else on Radiohead, Jimbo?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, computer. all right. Good. What was that? You're number two? Holy crap, two. We're flying along here.
I know. See what happens when you don't talk?
Oh. Do you want to talk about that? You want to talk about not talking?
Kinda.
Should we just stop the show right now and talk about it?
This is
we'll just keep going. Let's just keep going. All right, my number two. This was tough for me. My number one, and my number two. Because they could flip flop for me, but it's two different types of music. So I guess it's 1A and 1B, you know. But we'll just stick with it. This is my number two. Okay. And my number two is Metallica, their self-titled album, Metallica. The Black Album is commonly known as. Came out, this is their fifth album, and it came out in 91. It's claimed that, you know, most people think this is their best album, and I would think even Metallica would tell you this is their best album ever. Had obvious great songs such as, of course, Enter Sandman, The Unforgiven, Nothing Else Matters, Whenever I May Roam, and Sad But True. Those are the ones that you'd hear on the radio, you hear everywhere. Enter Sandman, of course, is played all the time, and it never gets old for me. This album kind of changed the way people perceived Metallica, because at the time, you know, and their albums in the 80s, they're really heavy metal, thrash metal type band. And there's some good albums there, and there's some great songs, and I have them all. But this was, like, different. It was more, they had a little more ballad to them. It seemed like the lyrics were way more thought out and really had great meaning to them. I absolutely love, and their videos, of course, were great. All in black and white, which was awesome. It debuted number one in 10 countries immediately. And I think that helped with Enter Sandman being released on radio before. And it was just like, people were like, I gotta have this album. The songs were mostly written by their frontman, James Hetfield, and drummer Lars Ulrich. And I know people get pissy about Lars Ulrich because he shut down Napster. But whatever. Don't steal people's shit. They composed together at Ulrich's house in Berkeley, California. Another band from Berkeley, just like Green Day. They came up with... So they just would hang out at his garage, or in his garage, and just come up with these songs. And then, of course, Kirk Hammett and Jason Newsted, the other two members of the band, would kind of fill in the gaps. The songs were actually written within 2 months, in mid-1990. But it was controversial a little bit, but they hired Bob Rock, which is a music producer at the time, to help them produce the album. And he was known for, like, helping produce, like, Motley Crue and some of those 80s hair bands, you know, kind of stuff. I think there's a documentary called Year and a Half Of, and it documents the whole making of this album's the process, and it just shows that how much they fought, and not the band, it was almost more Bob Rock and Metallica against each other, you know, kind of thing. And it's actually really interesting. It's really interesting because it's like he was trying to change the way they do things. And for the, you know, if you ask him now, the album came out and it's great, but they were just so frustrated with the whole process and stuff. But it's a great documentary if you ever check it out. A year and a half in the life of Metallica. And I remember my brother had it and we watched it all the time because it was awesome. It had all the videos in it too, so that's kind of why we watched it. There's tons to say about Metallica, and I don't want to say something. There's probably a Metallica fan out there, including my brother, who's like, you didn't mention this, didn't mention it. Well, I'm not going to mention everything because this is one of the best albums ever. If you like rock music, if you like heavy metal music, this is the one that everyone's like, this is my number one. This is, you know, it's just awesome. They won the Grammy Award that year, or in 92, for the best metal performance. The cover. Everyone remembers the cover. It's just black. And, of course, there's in gray, there's Metallica in one corner and then a coiled snake in the other. And that was, like, kind of their logo, the snake. And there's a joke from, remember the movie This is Spinal Tap? And they came out with just a black album, and it was only black. And there was a big joke in the movie about just being a black cover because everything they came up with for artwork was like not good. It was just despicable and kind of demeaning towards women and everything. So they just came out with a black one, you know, just that's it. And so they actually joked to Metallica about how they stole their idea for a black album. It's kind of funny. So yeah, I'm not going to keep going on and on. I absolutely love Metallica. I've seen them like 5 times in concert. Enter Sandman's one of those songs that even people don't like metal or anything like Metallica, they know this song. Like even my mom likes this song. And my wife likes this song. Everyone, even Fletcher, I was listening to it today and Fletcher started singing it. And I don't even know where he hears it. So that's kind of funny. Yeah.
So when, oh gosh, I was probably in like fifth grade, sixth grade, I don't remember. It had to be six. We were doing a science experiment, like when you're in school, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And mine, I was testing the effects of music on your pulse. That was my science experiment. So I was listening to different genres of music and nice. Taking my pulse. And because of that, there are certain songs I cannot listen to this day because I listen to them on repeat doing this. One of them is When the Thunder Rolls by Garth Brooks. That was my country song. Come Out and Play by The Offspring I can't listen to. And Enter Sandman is one that I can't listen to because of that science experiment. I probably listened to it 90 times in like 2 days. I just cannot listen to those songs.
Well,
and that's sad because that's a great song.
Yeah, because that's basically your fault. That's not these artists.
No, it is my fault. Yeah. It is my fault.
Oh, man. A couple other things. Enter Sandman, obviously, it deals... I know you're going to listen to it after this, Jim. It deals with nightmares and stuff like that. And, of course, you see the video or just listen to the song. You can pick that up. The God That Failed actually deals with... Hetfield wrote it. James Hetfield wrote it. His mother died of cancer. So that song deals with that and her Christian Science beliefs, which kept her from seeking medical treatment. So he wrote that song about, because he disagreed with what she believed, but they let her do what she believed, and it ultimately ended up killing her, dying, you know, of cancer, which is sad. Mm-hmm. And,
Science.
Yeah. Nothing Else Matters is a really cool, like, ballad, like, they didn't have before, you know, and it actually dealt with, Hetfield wrote about his then-girlfriend while on tour. He missed her. So it's a love song.
That's a good song.
Yeah, it's a great
song.
Yeah. They actually considered the album, it's self-titled. Obviously, it's Metallica. They actually considered calling it 5 because it's their fifth album. But they decided, let's just, you know, they thought this is the best thing we've ever written. Let's just keep it simple and call it Metallica. And so that's where they came up with that. So, I love Metallica, Jim. I saw them last summer. They played the new U.S. Bank Field where the Vikings play in Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. And it was incredible. So, and that was my fifth time seeing them. So it's fun. You don't even have – it's just they put on a hell of a show. And, yeah, you don't even have to like rock or heavy metal music to like them. And this is the best music to listen to in high school in the locker room or getting ready for anything. Like this will pump you up like crazy.
So. Like church.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like what I listen to before I go to church. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
I kick the doors in. I'm like, let's blow the roof off this bitch. Yeah, I get really ready. So. Sorry.
Let me ask a couple questions. Are you done with Metallica? Are you finished with Metallica?
Yeah, I thought you meant in life. And no, I still listen to them. But no, right now, yes, I'm done. I mean, there's tons of stuff on them, and people can, you know, do your own Wikipedia search on that one.
So let me ask a couple questions. One, what was the first CD you ever bought?
First CD, not tape.
No, CD.
I'm kind of embarrassed, but I think the first CD I ever bought or was given. I'm sorry to ask.
Both. Do both.
Well, the first one I was ever given was Crisscross.
Yes.
Totally Daddy crossed Mac, out. Daddy Mac wanted to make you jump. The first one I ever bought, you know what, actually it was because my brothers are older than me and they're big into 80s metal stuff, and I like it too. So the first one I ever bought was AC/DC's Back in Black.
That's a good album.
Yeah, and so that was the first one I ever bought with my own money. So I go, how about you?
The first one I was given, I remember my mom, for Christmas one year, she got me my first CDs. It was Green Day's Insomniac.
Nice.
And also Jeff Foxworthy's some redneck one. Like, you might be a redneck if whatever. I had those two.
Sorry.
And then I used like a Best Buy gift card to go buy. So the first one I ever bought was Silverchair's Frog Stomp.
Ooh, I love Silverchair. Underrated.
I still love Silverchair.
Love Silverchair. Frog Stomp, I had that CD. I eventually bought that one myself. Yeah, that's a great one. Good, good. Oh, Jim, should we get to our number ones?
Well, run down a quick list of ones that didn't make your list.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to mention... There's two that I think one there might be one of your number ones, so I'm not going to mention those.
Okay.
Remember the band Live?
Yeah, oh, yeah, Throwing Copper.
Yeah, love that CD. Blink-182, What's My Age Again?
Which I think if there was no Green Day, there'd be no Blink.
There would, exactly. And I love Blink-182, and we did top five songs, or top, you know, they played a huge role in the 90s music for me. The Foo Fighters, their first one, the self-titled one. Yep. Beastie Boys, Ill Communication. Snoop Dogg, Doggy Style. Love that CD.
Dude, I almost had Doggy Style on my list. Yeah. That is my favorite rap album.
Yeah.
My friend Adam and I used to drive in his station wagon, and he had subs in the back of the station wagon and like ground lights below it and shit. Yeah. And we used to just listen to that album on repeat all the time.
There was three here that I left that were like, they were going to be on my list and I had to knock them down. And I don't want to, I'm not going to mention them right now because I think one of them might be your number one. But, yeah. Oh, remember the Jerky Boys?
Oh, my God, yes.
I almost put them on there because I absolutely loved the Jerky Boys CDs.
Oh,
and I know,
man.
It's not
Jerky
music,
Boys
but it's still a CD, and I freaking loved it. So
Jerky Boys and Adam Sandler,
oh,
when those
God.
Came out, that's like...
They're all going to laugh at you.
Jackknife.
I almost choked in my water. Now, what about you? What are some of the ones you
ones that we haven't talked about? There's one of them that I'm pretty sure is your number one, so I'm not going to mention it.
Okay.
You mentioned Doggy Style. I love The Chronic also.
Yeah, that's a
if
good
we're
one.
Sticking with rap, Wu-Tang's Enter the Wu-Tang, A Tribe Called Quest, Low End Theory was great. Counting Crows, August and Everything After, which is probably one of my favorite album titles in general. I loved Everclear, Sparkle and Fade, Cake, Fashion Nugget was great. Rage Against the Machine, I love their self-titled, and Evil Empire were both awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And one that doesn't get enough play is Jeff Buckley's Grace.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful album.
Yeah.
He would have had quite the career.
I asked you before we went on, I sent you a text. I said, what was your wife's favorite? And I mentioned that because my wife, you know, she likes to take our topics or give us topics. It goes to her work, and then all her work friends, they do their top five. And her number one, my wife's number one, is Jagged Little Pill by Alanis Morissette.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Actually, it's a great album. It is. Yeah. So what about what's your wife's favorite?
No Doubt, Tragic Kingdom.
Nice.
Would have been her favorite. She also loved LFO, so I'm sure an LFO album would have been on there. Probably.
Jim, let me ask you this. Is there a Savage Garden CD in your home right now?
Probably.
Okay.
Probably.
Okay.
Yeah, but probably more like No Doubt would probably be her number
good.
One.
Well, that's a great album. That was their first one, I believe.
I think their first commercial one. Like success. Yeah.
Cool. Well, let's get to it, Jim. Number one's here.
Number one.
What do you got?
You can probably guess what mine is.
Is it a double album?
It is a double album.
All
yes.
right.
Because I think I've mentioned it quite a few times on this show.
Yeah.
Smashing Pumpkins, Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness.
Right.
1995. It's a double album, 28 tracks. Their third studio album behind Gish and Siamese Dream, which I love both of those albums, especially Siamese Dream. It's great. The singles off this album were Bullet with Butterfly Wings, 1979, Zero, Tonight, and 33. It was released at number one, which is rare for a double album. And I say when it's their third album, it's their third studio album, because Billy Corgan likes to release a lot of stuff. They probably have released more B-side albums than actual studio albums. They released Pisces Iscariot, which is just a collection of B-sides and rarities. And when they did Siamese Dream, there's the Siamese single album, which is Today and Disarm and Cherub Rock and the singles off of that one, plus a list of B-sides to make up EPs for each single, which is what he did for Melancholy. Also, they released a box set called The Airplane Flies High. And it's a black and white box. And in it are five CDs. And the first track is with Butterfly Wings, but then there's five B-sides on it. And then 1979, there's five B-sides on that one. So he'll make an album, like a 12-track album, and have to cut out like 45 tracks and then just release a B-sides album. So like I said, he probably has more B-sides and rarity songs than they do actual studio songs. This was my first concert. The first tour I ever went to was the Melancholy Tour, and Garbage opened for him. And this was the tour where Jimmy Chamberlain, the drummer, overdosed, along with, I want to say, the keyboardist. And then they had a hiatus for a while, and then the drummer from Filter joined the rest of the tour. And that's when I got to see him on that leg. Luckily, they rescheduled my tour date, because I would have been brokenhearted if they did not. But I love this album. It has a special place in my heart. It was just like right when I was really getting into music, and this album came out, and it just, it spoke to me, Tom. It spoke to me. But I love Smashing Pumpkins, and apparently they are talking about reuniting and doing another album here coming up sometime soon, hopefully, with the original four members, Darcy and James Iha and Chamberlain and Corgan. And Corgan was saying if they come back and do this, they can't make an album for the times. Like, they can't make a rock album for rock now, because it won't sell, which is kind of what he's done for Oceanic and the last few albums he's done. He says we need to make a rock album like Alternative in 1993, like Siamese Dream, like Melancholy, so that all of our old fans in that time base will buy this album. Otherwise it won't be anything. And he's right. Because the last albums he did, which, I mean, it's under the Smashing Pumpkins title, but that's basically just Corgan with a bunch of other people. They don't do as well because they're not as good.
Mm-hmm. Great.
So my number one album is Melancholy in the Infinite Sadness.
That's a good pick, Jim. That's a good pick. This was one of the three I didn't mention because I didn't make my list, and I knew this would be your number one. Because I know you so well. I had this CD, and I think it was a blue CD and a pink CD, correct?
Yep.
I believe it was the pink one. Some jackass wrote on it with pen on mine. And I don't know who did it, or I don't remember, but I can never listen to that CD.
And that was the better one.
I know.
The pink one was Dawn to Dusk. And then the blue one was Twilight to Starlight. And the blue one had 1979 and 33 on it. 33 is probably my favorite album on the whole thing.
Yeah.
But it had those two. But as a whole, Dawn to Dusk, the pink one, was definitely the better album of the two.
Right. And I love 1979 and probably like that one the best because it's the one CD I could listen to because I couldn't hear that one. But Tonight is one. It's a great song. And talked about that in our video episode. Awesome video. So cool. Good, Jim.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank
you. Well, yeah.
I think I'm going to know your number one.
Okay.
But Thomas, what is your number one?
Well, my number one, first I'm going to say, so the three I left off was The Smashing Pumpkins, Melancholy, like you mentioned. I left off Nirvana, Nevermind. And I know that's like number one for a lot of people. And I love all the music on there, but I left off. And the other one I left off, which was hard, was Guns N' Roses, Use Your Illusions 1 and 2.
Oh, sure.
Love that CD. But I left it off, and my number one is Weezer, the Blue Album.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't, it's the best, it's the best. It's just, I absolutely love it. It came out in 94. It's in, everyone knows, I mean, for the, everyone knows, mostly knows it for Buddy Holly, Say It Ain't So, and Undone, the Sweater Song. But the yep. whole freaking CD is awesome. And I'm going to tell you every song that's on it. My name is Jonas, no one else. The world has turned and left me here. Buddy Holly, Undone, the Sweater Song, Surf Wax America, Say It Ain't So, In the Garage, Holiday, and Only in Dreams. And I mention every song because every song is freaking awesome.
Now I'm really mad that I didn't put it on mine.
I'm a little upset too.
This was actually on my list until my wife brought up Sublime and it bumped it off.
I can, you know, and that's fine. That's fine. I just, you know, I don't like her already anyway, so whatever, it's her fault. So.
I remember listening to this album on a road trip when I was in high school, and it just played on repeat, and it is fantastic. I love The World Has Turned and Left Me Here, and I love Only in Dreams. I love every song in this album.
Exactly, every song. In the Garage is one of my favorites. This, and you said it, yeah. You can listen to it and just on repeat. You know, and like, I remember, you know, back in 94, 95, 96, you know, that's when I was in middle school, you know, and like my friends would come over and we sit and like play PlayStation and just eat Doritos, and because we didn't do anything, we didn't have cell phones, couldn't drive, and this would just repeat over and over again. It just reminds me of sitting in my room hanging out with, you know, my buddies Tony and Ryan, and it's all we'd listen to. And when we started driving and we had a car and we finally got a CD player in that car, we play this over and over again too. It's just, it's the best CD they've ever made. It's their it's Weezer's first album.
Yeah.
And then they didn't come out with one for a really long time after.
So, you know? Pinkerton.
Right. Many of the songs, Rivers Cuomo is he wrote almost all the songs. Many of the songs are from his past experiences. My Name is Jonas actually deals with his brother who leaves, his brother's name is Leaves, who had been seriously injured in a car accident while a student at Oberlin College, and then having trouble with his insurance. And so that's what that song's actually about. Everyone thinks the Sweater Song is funny and it's great, but it's actually, Cuomo describes it as the feeling you get when the train stops and the little guy comes knocking on your door. It was supposed to be a sad song, but everyone thinks it's hilarious. So it's kind of interesting that it's just about this, you know, kind of being bullied kind of thing. The first single, Say It Ain't So, is actually about Cuomo believing his parents split up when he was 4 because he thought his dad was an alcoholic. Am I ruining all the songs for everyone now?
No, I mean, that one's pretty, it's a great, if you listen song. To the lyrics, that one's pretty apparent. Yeah. Like, somebody's hiney has crowded in my icebox.
Oh, God, I'm going to start crying. It's a great song. And Buddy Holly is awesome. One of the best videos ever, still. Yeah. It was on, and we go back to our music video episode. I talk about it a lot on there. They actually released a deluxe edition with some B-sides in March of 2004. The second disc that they released it with, because it's a double album, called Dusty Gems and Raw Nuggets, and it's just a bunch of B-sides and rarities, which is cool. It makes tons of lists of being the best of and must-have, and of course it made mine. I mentioned the Sweater Song. He was actually the first Weezer song that Rivers Cuomo ever wrote back in 91. And then 3 years later, they released it as a single. So yeah. Spike Jonze, again, he directed all their videos of those three songs, Say It Ain't So, Sweater Song, and Buddy Holly. And I freaking loved it. I mean, it's just the best. I don't even mind looking at my notes because I don't need them, because it's the best. I would sit and listen to it. It literally I want to be back in my parents' bedroom or my parents' house in my bedroom there, just hanging out. And just like, it was the best. It's absolutely the best. I love it. I don't know what I can say about it, because I could say everything about it. But, and I'm a little upset it's not on your list.
Well, you know what? It should be. Yeah. It should be on my list. And looking over the track listing and stuff, I'm probably going to listen to it on my way to work tomorrow.
Right.
That is a great album. I stand by my list,
no,
but
you should stand by your list.
It is definitely my number 6, and is fantastic. That is a very good pick, sir.
Yeah.
Weezer, they're kind of interesting to me. I love the Blue Album. And then Pinkerton came out with like no commercial success whatsoever.
No.
But it's like their cult classic. Like, you're not a real Weezer fan unless you like Pinkerton. Sure. And Pinkerton's like the best album of all time if you're a Weezer fan or whatever.
Right.
I mean, it's fine. There's some good tracks on it. But then after that, it's like, I don't know, they almost went gimmicky with a lot of their stuff, with like the Make Believe album with the Hollywood song. And I think their last album that they just came out with, the White Album, has like a really gimmicky song on it, and kind of a made for radio thing. The Green Album had some good stuff. The one that came out after Pinkerton, like Island in the Sun,
was the Green Album's great, and the Blue Album's great. And I know people like, if you got to listen to them all to be a true Weezer fan. Yeah, okay, fine, but I don't have to listen to any of them but the Blue Album, because that's all that matters.
Right. Right, and I'm also not a true Weezer fan. I just love the Blue Album.
The Blue Album's great, and you said the Green Album has some great songs. I do like it, but the Blue Album.
Hashpipe is an awesome song.
Hashpipe's a great song, and I, you know, this was one. You know, I mentioned how my Metallica one and this one could be my number one. Metallica was like, that's my brother's music. I grew up loving it because my brothers loved it, and I do love it. I grew to be a huge fan, but like Weezer came out. Like a time where, like, now this is my generation's music kind of thing. You know, they had that feeling about it.
Right.
And so it's like I took almost ownership of it. Like, I like Metallica, and I'm glad you guys like Metallica, but this is my favorite one, you know? So it's kind of cool. It kind of separated me from my brothers a little bit, in a good way, I think. You know, give me individuality a little bit, so.
You're like a shining star.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks, buddy. Oh, man. Well, this has been fun. Now I got to listen to all this music again, which, no problem here.
Yeah. So. I actually just listened to this music exclusively. Good. Oh, you know what? This was a little nugget that I found interesting. One of the albums I didn't say was Nine Inch Nails, The Downward Spiral.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. I loved this album, and I like Nine Inch Nails a lot, but this album, Pretty Hate Machine, was awesome, but I loved Downward Spiral, and did you know, which I found really disturbing, that they started recording the album in Manson's murder house, the house where Sharon Tate was murdered?
Did not know that. No.
Yeah, they called it the Pig House because they spray painted pig, or they painted pig on the door after they killed Sharon Tate.
Jesus.
So they went there and started recording. And there's even a song on the album called Piggy. And they were recording in there until Sharon Tate's sister confronted Trent Reznor and said he was trying to profit off of this tragedy. And he went home that night and actually cried himself to sleep. Jeez. And put himself in her shoes and realized, like, what if that was my sister and somebody was doing that to my sister's legacy? So they moved out of the house and stopped recording there. But I thought that was crazy.
That's a cool, interesting little nugget.
Yeah.
Oh, well, cool. Jim, what are we going to do next week? We haven't talked about it. I have an idea.
We haven't decided.
Can I throw it out at you? Because it's your idea, and you talked about doing it later, but I kind of like it for next week because I think it'll be an easier one again for us to just throw together.
You know, and I actually think the ones where we throw together are better because it's knowledge we have and it's more conversational.
Right. I mean, I sound absolutely horrible and everyone agrees, but I was thinking we should do our top five cult movies, cult classics.
Oh, yeah, that's a great idea.
That was your suggestion, and we talked about, because in the month of May, we are going to do summertime themed top fives because we want everyone to gear up for the summer. And we're going to do like our summertime movies, our favorite things to do on summer vacation. You know, we'll come up with the topics, but that's the 4 weeks of May we're going to do that. So we need something for next week, and I think cult movies. What do you think?
I love it. That's a great idea.
All right. Well, let's do that. And yeah, that's all I got. Oh.
Let the games begin.
I had to throw it in there. Oh, the bat is broken. I think it's a cross between Kermit the Frog, Sean Connery, and that's it. That's what it is. What do you think?
I'm busy writing down my top five cult movies before I forget what they were.
Oh, okay, yeah, write those down. Well, good, Jim, and everyone, stick around. I put together a little '90s music thing with, you know, enough to where we don't get sued. Instead of our theme music at the end, I put that in there because some of the songs that didn't make our list, some of the people are like, "Where's this? Where's that?" And I got a little something in there for your wife and my wife, even though they don't listen. So. But Jim, okay, real quick, where can everyone find us, Jim?
Or talk on the to social us? Medias, all of them.
Yeah,
Instagram, Facebook, Twitter,
Friendster, MySpace, all the. Have you checked our MySpace page in a while, Jim?
You know, I haven't. No, how's it doing?
Good, good. Tom is still my number one friend, but you're in the top 10.
Let me check. Hang on. Stand by.
Okay.
I'm pulling up the Instagram page to see how we're doing on this one.
You want me to sing a song?
My personal page is doing fantastic, by the way. Our page, we have 29 followers.
Nice. We need more.
We could use more.
Hey, let's put a challenge out there. We get to 100 Instagram followers.
Uh-oh, I don't like this.
We'll do this. Get 100 Instagram followers, and then we'll put a poll out there, and you guys, all our listeners, get to pick the topic. So you'll put a poll of like four different things we could do for a top five, and the winner, the vote, whoever has the most votes, that's the next show we'll do after that.
Okay.
It's going to be a while before we get to 100. Don't worry.
That's what I was going to say. We still have 71 more followers to go. So I think we won't have to do this until this time next year.
I could feel it. They're there. All right. Well, yeah. Again, go out and rate us on wherever you find your podcasts that's it, Jim. We'll just end it right there. I will talk to you in 5 minutes.
I will disconnect my phone.
I know where you live.
I'm kidding. I love you.
Oh, I love you too. All right. See you later.
Bye.
But a lesson learned in time. It's something unpredictable, but in the end is right. I hope you had the time of your life. Don't impress me.